Hi everyone, welcome to the podcast. I know that you guys have been waiting for another artist interview, and I can tell you it's worth the wait because today I am speaking with Kelly Wynn Conrad. I have been following Kelly's work and her beautiful way with colour for years, so I was absolutely thrilled to get the chance to chat with her. Kelly is the creator of the online art program True Colors. So we chat about that in this conversation, but we also talk about some of the challenges that come with being an artist and running an online business. So welcome to the podcast, Kelly.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
I'm delighted to have you on, and I've been following your work for a long time now over on Instagram. But I don't actually know too much about you, so I'm looking forward to finding out more today.
Laura, this is so amazing. And I've been following you for a really long time as well. So as it would be, I feel like I know you a little better because I've got to enjoy your podcast for a while now.
Yeah, I find that people who come onto the podcast often say that because they've had the opportunity to hear quite a lot about my path as an artist and about my family life and all those sorts of things. But today it's your turn.
How fun.
So I did have a little bit of a sticky beak over on your website. And I'm always debating whether to do this or not before I have an interview, because sometimes it's lovely to not know too much and just find it all out in the conversation. But I was curious, so I went over and had a look. I saw that you actually grew up in an artist community. And I have to ask you about this because I have no idea what this is. I'm not even sure if we have this in Australia. So can you satisfy my curiosity and tell me a bit about how you grew up and what it was like?
I'll be honest, it's not a normal artist community as many people think of it, because oftentimes we get this idea of hippies and freedom and paint in your hair all the time. But every family were artist families who made a good income off of their art and supported their family of, you know, 5 to 8 children on 5 acres with custom built homes. It was very abnormal, but I didn't have any idea of how abnormal it was.
Yeah. Well, but when you're in it, it just feels like that's the way that everyone would grow up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the abnormal part is not realizing that having that many successful artists around you, it's, you know, being an artist is so challenging and most people don't reach that kind of success. So it influenced me very heavily in this idea that being an artist is a successful career, which is pretty cool, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, well, that's a brilliant place to sort of start from, because so many of us sort of think of art as being hard and a difficult kind of road to take. And many people that I speak to have been discouraged from pursuing art because of that worry about, you know, are you going to be able to make an income and provide for your family? So to grow up with this vision and to, you know, really see artists succeeding around you, that must have shaped, I guess, the course that you ended up taking.
Yeah, well, actually, it didn't shape the course enough on the early years. I wanted to be an artist, but I stumbled along the way. So I ended up joining the military. So that's kind of a little strange turn of events.
Yeah.
But I'm grateful for that because it helped create a sense of place, learning how to be disciplined, learning a foreign language, meeting a lot of people from around the world. And eventually I had to find my way back to my free spirit creative part, which, you know, that's kind of understandable, but it was a great opportunity, you know, to kind of experience a different point of view, which kind of helped maybe a little bit influence my discipline. I'm still not very good at being disciplined.
Yeah, that's interesting. So how did you make your way back to art then?
Well, when I first got married and had my first child, I got out of the military and I went back to art school at the time, painted for a while, but like many mothers of small children, I thought, oh, I don't know how to paint and have kids at the same time. It seems so messy, right?
Yeah.
So it was the season of scrapbooking, as you remember, maybe through the late 90s and into through the 2000s, it was like the rage. That's all we did. I scrapbooked. And I got published. I worked for trade companies. You know, I taught scrapbooking classes, but I kept getting paid in more scrapbooking supplies.
Oh, I see.
I didn't make any like real progress on my own personal development as an artist. And I kept thinking, like, there's so much creativity involved in this, but I'm not creating something that's coming authentically for me. I'm using someone else's supplies to create something. So after my third child was born, I just had this epiphany. I'm like, I am compelled to go back to painting. My father's a painter. My great uncle's a painter. My great grandfather was a painter. It's like kind of in my blood. So I gave myself time. I gave myself grace and I practiced a lot and I went back and took more classes again and studied. And I gave myself about 4 years from the time he was born before I started actually showing my artwork in public again. So, you know, I mean, I think that that's the sensible thing to do, is to take your time to find your way when you make that decision that you know that that's what you want to do. Because I didn't want it to just be something quick and fast and show off and make art and then move on to the next thing. I really wanted to dig deep and make it a lifelong habit and process, you know, something that was my career. It was the identity I had always had since I was small. So it was just finding my way back.
So you knew at the time when you were spending that 4 years kind of trying different things, but you knew that you were working towards having a professional art career?
Yeah, I absolutely knew that that's what I wanted to do.
So you had a goal.
I knew, but I didn't know how, so I just knew I needed to take my time.
So what did you do in order to kind of, I guess, develop your style during that time and figure out what it is that you wanted to do eventually once you sort of launched the more career side of things?
Made a lot of art.
I'm so glad you said that.
I mean, so I have to tell this story that's probably made the biggest impact on me. I went to visit my great uncle, who's a painter, a lifelong painter. He made a career out of painting, just like my father has. And I went to visit him, and this was still like maybe the first year that I decided to come back to art. And I'd been looking on Pinterest and reading books. I was doing all this looking outside of myself. And I was telling him, I'm like, well, I picked up a book on brush strokes. And he just looked at me with this like look on his face, like, okay. And he stopped me. He said, you need to put the books down. You need to put the phone down and you need to make art and you need to make 100 pieces, because 100 pieces will give you a feel. And then you need to make 1,000 pieces and you'll start to really understand what it is to paint. And it was just that moment where I'm like, oh, I have to do it. I can't read about it. I can't look about it. I can't dream about it. I can't just think about it. Those are all nice and dandy, but if I don't do it, I'm never going to figure it out. So I just started making a lot of art. My style's changed even since then, but it was such a great way to get back into it. And I would give myself, before I knew what the 100-day challenge was, I gave myself a 100-day challenge. And I did. Yeah, it was just like, that was my instinct. So I thought it was kind of cool when I came across this worldwide known challenge that people do. So yeah, I say, and I will say to everyone, you have to make a lot of art. You have to make your work to know how to make your work.
So did you do a 100-day challenge around something specific, or was it just painting for 100 days or making 100 paintings? What did that look like?
Well, I was working towards an art exhibit. So I knew that I was, at the time I was working in soft pastel, and I don't know if you've ever used soft pastel much as the main medium. Like, I just only use soft pastel on paper to paint complete landscape paintings. Mm-hmm. So I decided that I would also make small, I was working on some big pieces, but I would make very small, like 3x4 landscape paintings. And I just painted that idea over and over again of some sort of landscape in this small format with soft pastel. And I think that there's something nice about sticking to something long enough to understand it before moving on to the next thing. And I think that that's probably a challenge I even have to this day. Like, I get so excited by new ideas that I don't stick with something long enough. But I think that was a long time to stick to it, a whole year of just doing one thing.
That's super inspiring. I don't think I've ever stuck at something for that long.
It's hard because there's so many great ideas that we're always filled with new, exciting ideas. But Laura, I look at your work and it looks to me like a lot of it is just cohesive and it's you, and we know it when we see it.
Yeah, it's funny how you sometimes don't see your work the way other people do. Yeah, the bouncing around thing, it's tricky sometimes because there's so much. I mean, it's a good thing, isn't it? Because there's just so much that you can experiment and explore, and it's a good problem to have in a way. I'm similar to you. I encourage all of my course participants to stick with something and explore it in a more deep way. And I love challenges too.
Yeah, just a really good way to keep you moving forward.
Yeah.
Set a few goals.
So your children would have been quite young when you were doing all this creating and making all these paintings. Is that right?
When I had my first exhibit after practicing, you know, on and off fairly well for 4 years, when I had my first exhibit, my youngest was 4. And my oldest, I think, would have been about 11 or 12 at the time. Let's see, maybe a little older. I'm an artist. I don't do math.
That's all right. We don't need the exact details, but I'm curious because you've got 3 children. Back then you were, you know, carving out your sort of art style, and now you're running online classes and workshops and retreats. And I'm always interested to know, and maybe this is just for selfish reasons in a sense, because I find the juggle of managing my art with my family life quite challenging. So I'd love to hear your kind of thoughts on that.
I find it very challenging too. Mm. There are times where I stop and I remember the days where I had endless hours to dedicate to the family, but I also realize that I'm teaching them something beautiful about having dreams and goals and working for it. So I'm trying to find balance between the two. I have incredible support from my husband. He looks at what I, from the moment I started, he looked at it, even though it was a challenge for all of us, he looked at it as a full-time career. So he knew that if 2 people are working in the home, that means 2 people split the work that needs to be done. And so he's always been there to help with cooking and cleaning and whatever the kids need. So I've had an unbelievable amount of support from him. He's an amazing father. But I also have started learning how to hire out some help too.
Ah.
I just wish that there was someone who could train me on how to manage my own personal time better.
I'm always looking at new ways of organizing myself and managing my time and all that sort of stuff. I'm one of those people who's always got like a new system going, and my husband's always laughing at me as my latest, you know, phase of how I'm going to, you know, live a better life and be on top of things. So.
Oh yeah, that sounds so familiar. Like I can get it right this time.
And then I would spend, you know, hours talking to him about how I've organized all this and I'm doing this on this day and, you know, time blocking and all those sorts of strategies.
My girlfriend lovingly nicknamed me the time optimist.
Now, can you tell me why?
Because I always think I have more time to accomplish all these great wild ideas than I actually do.
That's what I was thinking, because this morning I was doing a bit of a brain dump of everything I wanted to do this week. So it's Monday morning here where I am. You know, I write everything down and then I start slotting it into my calendar because I'm in an organizational phase at the moment.
Right.
So, you know, I'm on organization. This will all, you know, fall apart, I'm sure, in the next week or two. But I start trying to slot everything in and it just does not fit. Like,
Nope. And here's the thing is, you're like, sure, I can do these 20 things in this one day. I can do it. I'm totally capable. It's just a few emails.
Yeah.
And I'm going to write this proposal and I'll clean my studio and I'll make this one video. And you're like, okay, I might get like 2 things on my whole list. I have also started realizing I maybe just need to cross things off and realize I can't do it all. It's the ambitious side of me.
Yeah. It can be hard, isn't it? Because it's just, you have all these great ideas that you want to put into place, but actually finding the time to do them all is a challenge. I'm interested in what your kind of week looks like as far as how you balance things, and do you have a dedicated studio time or do you have working hours? I am so interested in this stuff and I'm jumping a bit around the place here in this conversation.
It's a great question. But it's still on task.
Yeah, I'm just curious. So how do you manage your week?
I'm actually stumped by that question, to be honest with you, because I'll be honest, sometimes I just don't think I manage it very well at all. I mean, I obviously do because I'm getting so much done.
People
think that I'm some sort of superwoman, but if you see behind the scenes, I basically wake up in the morning, start with coffee, and I just figure out how to squeeze it all in between the time I wake up and the time I go to bed.
I love that strategy. I just get my coffee and I just try and squeeze as much as I can eat.
I always stop for family time. That's important to me. But if they're busy, if somebody's doing something, I think you said once you and your husband just say, oh, we're still working, but we love to work. And I just related to that comment you said on your podcast a few months ago. And I'm like, that's it. The kids are all playing their video games, or they're off doing something and, you know, they're with their friends, they've got an event. And I just am like, oh, I've got 2 more hours I can spend working.
Yeah, that always happens to me.
I know, and I think, it's because there's always something else I can do. I can write another blog post. I can make another proposal. I can answer more emails. I can organize something. But the thing that I think I regret the most in the last few months, I've been so busy that I haven't spent enough time dedicated to my studio. Mm. I'm like, my head is pouring with ideas. But then I get in the studio and I'm like, oh, what assignment do I have for work? And I realize I'm my own boss. So maybe I need to give myself a little bit of grace here in the studio.
I'm so glad you mentioned it, because this is something that becomes a challenge, doesn't it, once you start to grow your art business and the other parts take over. Because I don't know about you, but when I was going through that sort of 4-year period, because I had a similar kind of period where I wasn't selling my work, I was just making art and engaging in the art community, and it was a hobby for me. And at that point, I didn't actually know it was going to turn into a career. And at that time, I was making art nearly every day. And just like you, when you were talking about doing the 100-day project or those sorts of things. And then when you move into the professional side of things, so much of the time gets taken up with the marketing, with the, selling of things, the actual packaging, and then when you get into teaching, then there's all the course prep and anyway, I don't need to tell you because you know all about it.
I know all about it, but maybe the people who are listening, who are new to this, and even before I began teaching, there's prepping your artwork, making all of your inventory, hauling that stuff to a gallery space. And for 4 years, I spent curating shows, during shows, working for the nonprofit organizations. I did anything I could to get my hands in the art community and get the experience that I need. So that took a lot of my time and energy as well. But, it was so valuable because I learned so much. I had to just throw myself into the fire, and just learn by experience. Then, like you said, with teaching, it does take up a lot of time, but I love it just as much as I love the time of painting. I love teaching.
Yeah.
I love the opportunity to meet with virtually or in person artists from all around the world. It's like unbelievable that we have this opportunity.
Yeah, I completely agree and relate to what you're saying, because I feel exactly the same way. And I get a bit torn sometimes because I love teaching so much that, the personal practice side of things sort of falls away a bit. But
that being said, how good of a teacher can you be if you don't keep fresh with what you're making? So that's where I realized I need to even if I was to just dedicate like a couple hours, a couple different days of the week to make sure that I just say, okay, it's just like, I need to have enough time to, do the laundry. Well, I need to have enough time to also paint a painting. Okay.
Do you find that
set the time aside, right?
Yeah, that's right. But do you find that when you're painting and you sort of have your personal practice, do you find you're more thinking about it from a teaching point of view? Because, potentially it could be something that you would teach later on, or do you have separate work that you do that is not related to teaching at all?
I have not been very good about separating the two, but I have recognized that very recently that I need to have a practice that I'm not thinking about what the product is, that I just, because this is what I teach. I always teach about the process and about the emotions, your feelings behind it, why you're making it, not in a like cerebral, bigger sense, but like in the holistic sense of how it helps us, how it heals our heart, how creating puts out more beautiful energy into the world. So if I'm teaching that, then I need to practice it more. And so I have been trying to think about that and dedicate at least a couple art journals that I'm not putting on Instagram. Instagram that I'm not sharing with anyone. Because if you know you're going to share it, or if you know that you've got to sell it, or if you know that you've got to teach it, it changes the whole outcome. So my goal is to say, okay, these couple of art journals, when I work in them, they're not to show, so that I actually create just for the sake of creating.
Mm, yeah, it is different, isn't it? When you're just creating without any sort of ideas of sharing.
Still something in the back of your head that says, ooh, I really liked how that turned out. I think I'll have to repeat it and teach it. And
yeah, then you're like,
that wasn't really what I was supposed to do, but that's what I ended up doing.
But then that's kind of cool too, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
Like you were saying, like the best teaching springs from that place of enthusiasm, you know, when you discover something and then you're like, oh, this is so cool, I just want to share it. And then a class develops out of that. And yeah, so I think you can never really fully separate the two. It's like everything in life. I mean, you're one person.
I mean, and your family and your relationships and your experiences all come into the studio with you anyway. It's not easy to separate who we are from the art that we make.
That's right. Yeah, it's all interconnected. So I'm just thinking, backtracking a little bit to where we were at as far as your story. So you spent, because I got sidetracked, but you spent time working on your art and making a lot of art. And then what happened?
And then I joined a local nonprofit art organization, which is where I would tell anyone if they're interested in moving to that next step with their art career, it's a great place to start. I started with Maryland Federation of Art, and it was an opportunity to submit to local juried art shows and meet other artists that had more experience than me and get advice and make new friends that were all artists, which, you know, is this kind of essential when you're an artist to be able to relate to another artist, because otherwise we're in our own little bubble. So that's where I started. And when I got into a juried show, I just worked my butt off from there. And I got overambitious and went and invited every gallery to come and meet me. Because I didn't know any better. And if you get to know me, I'm not an introvert. I'm one of those extrovert artists. So I am not shy, and I will take a risk. And I did, but I made friends that way, and I got to know the galleries, and I became really good friends with one of the galleries, and I offered to curate shows for her through the summer. It just kind of snowballed after that, and cool opportunities happened. I did a residency in Baltimore. I did a co-op gallery in New York City, had me in a show once, and that seems like it's too cool to say I showed in New York City, but, you know, it didn't lead to anything other than more experience.
Yeah.
So I just tried everything, and when teaching kind of fell into my lap, I knew that was the direction I wanted to go. And I've been teaching for about 2 years now. True Colors itself only started about a little over a year ago.
So let's talk a little bit about True Colors. For the people that are listening, we can let them know what it is and so they can find out more about it. I came to know you, I think, through the Color Crush Creative Instagram account. Is that right? Have I got the name right?
That is absolutely correct.
Yes.
And that started on a whim. That was one of the few things I did without overthinking it.
So
I put it all together in like 2 hours.
Oh, so what, you just had this idea that you were going to create this account and share the color palettes? I'll let you explain it.
Yeah, it was kind of basically that was it. I had a small Facebook group from encouraging other people to do the 100 artwork project. I know, it's so funny. That's what I started, and then I realized there was the 100 day project, which is I had no idea about it. So I had my own little group there all excited and making our 100 artwork.
Ah, so you had your own 100 day thing or 100 artwork challenge going on.
Yep. And that was a Facebook group. And after the 100 days, and I think it was a year after it had passed, I said, well, okay, so what's everybody working on now? What do you need help with? And someone said, you know what I really need help with? I need help with new color palettes. I'm stuck in a rut. And I said, ooh, I have an idea. I'll be back to you in 2 hours. And Color Crush Creative was born that fast. I'm like, I'm going to have a new color palette every week, and I'll have an email list, and everyone who gets on the email list, and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, then for a whole year, I produced a new color palette every month or every week and shared people's artwork and sent a newsletter, and people asked for more help with color and more information. And they wanted to know you know, where do these colors come from? How do I make these colors? And tell me more about how to make art, and tell me how you make your acrylic paintings. And what about, you know, the questions just kept pouring in. And I just finally realized I had to take that jump and create a program that I could just turn what I was doing into something that I could teach with. Unfortunately, I didn't really think about marketing and branding very well, and I picked a different name for the program, which is True Colors, and it got confusing, and that's why I dropped the Color Crush Creative name. I still own it. I still love it. I don't use it. It's just kind of in my heart to put to the side, and I didn't want to confuse people anymore. I've gone forward with True Colors, and we don't do a palette every week because that would be exhausting. We're just doing it.
I was just thinking when you said that, when you said that earlier about doing a palette every week, I was like, wow, every week.
I mean, I pretty much worked for an entire year without any compensation, without asking anything from anybody. And from it was born this program that I just cherish. I treasure the artists that participate and the guest artists who provide lessons. And we have inspiration from all over the world, including Miss Laura Horn next month in September.
I know. Perfect timing, huh? I've only just been finishing off my class for next month. So I'm very excited to share that with you. Exciting.
I'm beyond excited, you know. So we're just growing and changing and evolving over the course of a little over a year now. What's really cool about the program is the only way I can kind of help people understand, it's like kind of like Netflix. When you pay for a membership, you get all the content, everything that's ever been created. And when you're not in the program anymore, then you don't have access to it. So it's not a lifetime access, but it's a very affordable. There's like 150 lessons in there already.
Wow.
When you join, it's only $33 a month. So, you know, I think it's a steal of a deal to be able to get the kind of community content and support that you need to grow as an artist, no matter what level you're at.
And you've got some fantastic artist contributors to the program that you've had over the last, how long did you say the program's been running?
May of 2018 was when we began. Yeah, we've had some unbelievable artists, and unbelievable artists going to join us next year too.
It must have been a great prelude or help to have done the Color Crush Creative to make all those connections to artists that you could then ask to come onto the program. So
I think that the wisest thing to do when you want to get into any sort of online business per se is to create connections and community. Give of yourself, make an impact in people's lives, and do what you can with gratitude, without expectation of anything in return. But I think when you do that, eventually it just comes around, and the right time and the right thing happens, and you meet awesome people like Laura, or my current guest right now is Tara Axford, also in Australia. Man, we keep saying this over here in America, but you Australians are the most talented people we know. We love Australian artists so much. I'm not even kidding you. When I sit around with other artist friends, or I'm teaching art classes, and everyone's like, oh, we just love all those Australian artists. So I don't know what's in your water over there, but I'm going to come for a visit.
Oh, you should do. You should do. And then you should come and visit me.
Oh, I would love to.
Yeah.
So it's building community, I think, is the key. And you know, social media is a challenge, and it's a blessing. It's a blessing because it's, you know, given so many people fortunate lifestyles to be able to harness the power of the internet. But at the same time, of course, it's the curse, because you feel like you always have to be a slave to it. But I'm trying to find a new point of view, which is I'm making real connections with real people. And I mean, I just taught in the Pacific Northwest and was able to meet up with an artist that I'd known for a couple of years because of Instagram, you know? And I feel like I have friends no matter where I go, and real true friends, not just imaginary friends. Like, you know, I mean, we feel like social media becomes this imaginary place where people hang out, but they're real friends, and they're really amazing people, real generous, sweet. I mean, I guess I'm pretty lucky because I haven't felt like I've had other than the drive to have to always be on there. I haven't felt like I've had some of the negative impacts of mean girls.
Yeah. Yes, there is that side of it. Yeah, similar to you, I haven't really had problems with that side, but it's more about the, I guess it's just the time that it takes up.
I think if you were to meet anyone on the other side of their Instagram account, you would find that life isn't as perfect as any of us ever make it to be. So I know I'm not dressed until 2 o'clock in the afternoon, so I'm not living a pretty lifestyle over here.
Well, I'm actually sitting in my pajamas doing this podcast, so there you go.
Yes, that is so awesome.
Yeah.
The real life of us online entrepreneurs is not glamorous at
no,
all.
No, it's funny because I put my makeup on, so I got ready and then I was in my pajamas. I went, but I'm really comfy. And I was you know what?
Oh.
I'll just stay in my pajamas. It's all good.
Yes, so, honey, of course I got dressed today. I got up, I got showered, and I put on a clean pair of sweatpants.
Yeah, speaking of social media, I mean, I agree with you completely. Like, it is a blessing. There's so much that has happened for me in my business through social media connections. In fact, pretty much my whole business is mm-hmm. directly related to having an audience on social media and meeting people. And I've met quite a lot of people in real life, as you said, not just online, and it's been fantastic. And I think we're quite quick to kind of put social media down, but then there's this other side of it that's really quite amazing and incredible, the way that you can meet up with artists all over the world and all that side of thing. It is something that you do need to be mindful of as far as, you know, how you kind of manage it on a day-to-day basis. And I'm just wondering, do you have any kind of strategies around that you use to kind of keep yourself focused and away from comparison and things like that?
I think that's a really important question, because it's really hard when you see accounts taking off or people talking about their successes, and it doesn't feel like it's as genuine of a place as you want it to be. And comparison, you know, I think that's human nature. I think when the algorithms have changed and changed again and changed again, and we all panicked and we all tried to do something to fix it, we all made our little comment pods, or we posted 10 times a day, or we tried to figure out how to fix it. And then I suddenly realized, I'm like, is this what I'm going to be doing when I'm 82 years old? Like, am I going to worry about the numbers on Instagram? And I think that when I finally let go, it was probably not until this year. And I don't think that I've grown hardly but a few hundred people in this entire year, because the algorithm's so weird. And I just said, I don't care.
Mm.
I just had to let go. I mean, there just came a point where I had to let go, that when I had 1,000 people, I had better luck selling. So I'm not saying that, you know, I know our businesses for many people operate because of social media. And so sometimes it's frustrating, because when they, the big people of who own the product of Instagram and Facebook, keep playing around with how the rules of the game, it feels frustrating, because we know that we rely on the business, but there just has to be a point where I say, I just can only do so much. So I'm just going to keep moving forward, and I have to let go, because they've changed the rules so much on me. Actually, you know what, Laura, that's my philosophy in life. I have no control of anything outside of myself. So I have to just learn to let it go, or we'd all go mad if we worry about those things we can't control. Letting it go is the only thing that I can say. It's not an easy thing, but taking more breaks from social media now and making more real connections in real time.
Well, whenever I see artists that have taken a break from social media, and whether that's just for a few days or a week or longer, usually what I think to myself is, I bet they're doing something really cool right now. You know, like, they're yep. off social media because they're, you know, putting together a workshop or making an online class or working on mm-hmm. a book or something. Like, that's where what I think. Like, I sort of see those gaps and I go, I bet they're doing something really cool.
And for me, I was traveling, you know, for the last couple of weeks, and I did not have a lot of time for social media, and I really wanted to be in the moment and soak it all in. So it's just retraining our brains. Our brains kind of get wired towards the pings and the checking the stats. And it's just, it's about rewiring your brain back to like a little bit more balance and normal, the way it was long before we worried about how many likes Although I heard over there in Australia, you don't have to see those likes anymore.
Yeah, it's only a fairly recent change. They've now taken the total off. I think it's the same in Canada and maybe a few other countries. So we don't actually see how many likes are on other people's posts. So that has changed the experience of Instagram quite a bit. It's good.
Do you feel like it helps?
I'm a little bit on the fence with it. It definitely helps from the comparison point of view. I find then that I'm having a more, I guess, organic, authentic reaction to things. I'm not comparing. I'm just, I like this or I don't or whatever. I like that. I like the fact that my opinions aren't being influenced by numbers as I'm scrolling through the feed. I didn't realize that they were, but there were times when I was seeing things and I'd see like, oh, there's loads of people liking this. And I think I'd almost just like it because it's like following the pack. And I didn't realize that that was happening. And then when I was scrolling through Instagram after they took the likes away, I was like, oh, this is really cool because I'm not influenced at all. So I like it from that point of view. And the other thing is obviously you're not seeing, you know, posts that are really booming and going, oh, I should be doing that. And it's
right. And then changing how you do things based on what you see.
Yes. Because what I find is that's distracting because suddenly it's like, oh, I should do, you know, I should focus on that or I should create a class about that because, you know, you see things happening and you get pulled in different directions. And so it's really good for staying in your own lane. So those are the good things. I think from a business perspective, I'm not sure. Like I think there is a bit of a impact of the likes not showing up just from like a social proof perspective as far as things that perhaps you offer. So if you do have work or courses and things that you're putting out there and you've kind of worked hard to sort of build up this audience and you, people aren't actually seeing that. So there's that. But you know what? I'm not really pushed about it because I mean, I had a whole podcast episode about this recently. I'm really focused on other areas, not just Instagram. And it's encouraged.
Exactly like you said, email.
Yeah.
We just have to be in all the places all at once. I even said today, I'm like, man, I could do so much. I have so many ideas if I could just clone myself a couple times.
I'm happy with it to stay the way it is because I like what it's doing to me. You know, maybe it's making me feel a bit uncomfortable, but I like that because it's making me focus on my own work more and not get caught up in likes and do things that are important to me and, yeah, just do the cool stuff.
That's a really good point. That's just doing it more from your own intuition rather than influence. I think that's going to – I bring it on. If Instagram wants to change things, I still wonder when they're going to bring it back to real-time feed. They break things in. That's all we ask for, right?
Yeah.
Just show me in the order it happened.
Yeah, that was the change that I didn't like. That was the big one. Yeah, that was sort of when the whole feel of Instagram changed, when it went from chronological to who knows how it all happens these days.
And that's why I said you just have to let go because we don't have control over it, right?
That's it. And that's kind of what I was thinking with the Instagram likes thing. At the end of the day, I don't have any control about whether Instagram's going to show likes or follow accounts or anything like that. So there's no point getting caught up in it and worrying about it and complaining about it. You just got to deal with it, don't you? Or as you said, just let it go and move on.
Pretty much I don't have a choice.
Yeah.
I tried worrying about it, but then didn't fix it. So,
what has it been like putting together the True Colors program? Because it's a pretty like big thing. Like it's a big project to take on. Are you doing it on your own, or do you have help to put it all together?
Slowly but surely, been adding help. I had help from a good friend of mine from the very beginning, Becca Bastian Lee, always artist because all my friends are artists anyway. They understand me better. And she helped me with editing and some graphic design and photography. And she still does help with the graphic design, photography, and she creates some content for the program. And then my friend Priscilla George, she just came on this year to help me. And I call her my project manager because she can see what needs to be done and she can help me accomplish those goals. And she's one of those people I can say, would you like to help me with this? And next thing I know, it's done. And I'm like, oh, please don't ever leave me. I need you. And here's the crazy thing. My teenage son, my middle child, my 16-year-old is doing all my editing now.
That's brilliant.
Isn't that amazing? You know what? The We did the most fun thing. Today, we went to the nature parks near us here, and he filmed me. A lot of times I'm filming in the studio, but in this case, I had him film me walking through the park and doing some little art sketches and stuff. And he had such a great vision for it. He would say, okay, now I want you to do this. And I'm like, oh, child, you are born for this job. It was so cute. I cherish that. I am working with my 16-year-old son, and we have a great relationship. So I think that it's really fun. And my youngest son wants to get in on the game, so I'm going to have to think about how to help him. I love that they want to be part of it. I feel very, very fortunate for that. So yeah, I do get help, and we just, because True Colors is a bigger thing than I expected it to ever be. I hired a community manager to help me manage some of the social media and emails and stuff, so I didn't have to do it all. My husband still has a more than full-time job, so I don't have the luxury of working with him yet, but who knows? He keeps eyeing the thought of quitting. I'm like, don't do that too quickly yet, babe. Wait a couple more years.
As you know, I have my husband working. We work full time together, but we don't have any other help. Although my daughter has been putting her hand up. She's 11, so she's quite young, but she wants to be my assistant.
It's amazing how much they pick up on and how many good ideas they have when they've been paying attention to what you've been doing. It's really kind of cool because I can turn to them for ideas and advice quite often.
Aren't they amazing? I mean, honestly.
They really are. And my oldest son, he amazed me. He said that he was really motivated to finish college. He's 20 years old, and follow through on his dreams, because he said the harder he sees me work towards my dreams, the more he wants to accomplish his. And that was the moment when I realized that what I was doing was making an important impact on my kids' lives too, so that they could see that, you know, when you have a dream and you dream big enough and you work hard enough, things happen.
Yeah, so often we're worried that we're not giving them enough time and attention because of our businesses sort of pulling us in different directions. Yeah. But you can't underestimate that, can you? The impact of seeing a parent like work hard, follow their passion, go for their dreams, fall down, get back up again. So it's good to hear that. It's good to be reminded that if, you know, you're out there working hard on your business, that there are things that your kids are learning from you that is going to have an impact on them later in life and encourage them. So
I was pretty surprised by it. But I am happy to hear it. And you know, I still try to make time to take them to the pool this summer and go on family vacation. And I do get to take them with me on trips from time to time too. So I get time with each of them that way. But, you know, I definitely don't have the time to do the things I did when they were younger. But fortunately, they are growing almost adult boys. So.
All right. Well, that's brilliant. So I want to just make sure that everyone can find out about the True Colors program if they want to. So where do they get the information about the program and how can they join?
Well, I would first say that, Laura, you'll probably have some good links right there on your website, and you can always use those links. But you can always just do a search for Experience True Colors and you will find me and all the information you need to know about the True Colors Art Program, which is a monthly subscription, any of my standalone classes, or some of the fantastic traveling workshops that I do. And next year I'll have 5 days in New York State, 5 days again in the Pacific Northwest, and a 10-day trip to France. So I would love to have more people come and join me, be able to meet artists and know their creative lives in person.
Oh. That sounds fantastic.
Yes. And maybe one day to Australia too.
That would be good. That would be it. I'd like to get over to America at some point. And there's so many artists that I'd love to visit. I'd love to just do a big road trip.
That's what I was thinking too. Wouldn't that be awesome? Let's just do that. Let's drive across America and meet all the artists we've ever met on Instagram.
it'd be so, I'd love to like take the podcast and like go on the road and interview and even like record the artists, you know, like their studios and all that stuff. That'd be cool, wouldn't it?
All right. Well, we've put it out there.
Put it out there.
You never know. Once you put an idea out somehow, the path just gets paved for
you, right? That's right. I'd like to just send those vibes out there. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you, Kelly. I feel like with any podcast interview, it's never enough time. Looking at the clock and I have to wrap up and there's still so many things I would have liked to ask you about. But anyway, I'm thinking I'm going to have to do some.
One of those days when we have a chance to meet in person, I'm sure there will be hours and hours of chatting.
I'm thinking as well, it'd be nice to, I'd like to do some revisits as well on the podcast and come and chat to people down the track. So see how you're going and how your programs evolved over time. So that would be cool too.
Well, I hope for that opportunity and I will see you in the True Colors program in September.
Yes, very excited about that. And I will link that all in the show notes for everyone. Well, thank you very much, Kelly.
Oh, awesome.
Thanks, then. See you later.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, that's it for this week. What a fantastic conversation. I absolutely loved Kelly's honesty as she talked to us about how she navigates her life as an artist and deals with things like social media stress. And it was such a refreshing conversation. I truly enjoyed it. Thank you, Kelly. And thanks everyone for listening in and being here. Please do share some stories for this podcast. Tag Kelly in them so that she knows that you enjoyed the conversation.